Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Oh, I was warned about her love.
It's Robert Cray bringing us back, my favorite blues man. 17 till the hour, I should say. I'm Jim Blasingame. I am the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and the one for my new book, Third Ingredient, with a number 3, thethirdingredient.com. Joel Barker is our guest, our good friend, joelbarker.com. Folks, I encourage you to check out that website. You will get smarter when you do, and you will thank me later. Joel is the author of a number of books, including Paradigms, The Business of Discovering the Future, Future Edge, also 5 Regions of the Future. He's a filmmaker extraordinaire. Starthrower.com, is that right, where the films are, Joel?
Yep.
So check all that out. Hey, Joel, a couple of things that we're going to talk about this segment are plans to build mega wind farms and artificial islands in the North Sea. Now, the North Sea is a very disagreeable part of the world. It's not a place you want to hang out. It's cold. The seas are always rough there, but because of all that, there's also a good opportunity for energy to be pulled from there, right?
It's a huge wind source, and those big waves that are kicked up there are kicked up by the wind. And so what the Europeans are thinking of doing, and actually have plans to do, is to build a series of artificial islands in the North Sea and hook a 6 wind farms to each of the islands and then bring the electricity generated by those wind farms back to the UK and the European nations along the North Sea. And what this does is it does 2 things that are really important. Number one, it moves the wind farms away from the coasts where people complain about
objective.
Them.
You and I would too.
It's one of those things. Actually, I find them very interesting to see, you know. But, you know, too many of them would be inappropriate, especially
right.
when you can build an artificial island to service these hubs, they're calling them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's advantage number one, is they're visually gone. Advantage number two is it's really windy up there. And so you can build much bigger windmills to take advantage of it. And they're talking about wind generators as large as 15 gigawatts per generator.
Wow.
Now think about 15 gigawatts
That's
coming out of one wind generator, when right now a whole wind farm generates 1 gigawatt.
And that part of the world, the wind blows all the time, doesn't it?
All the time and fast. It's you know, it's not 5 miles an
it's
hour.
Brutal.
In the 20s and the
30s. Brutal.
So the end result is that they can make a very big move toward reducing their carbon footprint while getting their wind generators any place where the wind blows constantly, so they have a steady use, and they can scale it up. The beauty of this thing is it's one small element. You know, it's a big element, but it's one small element compared to a power
plant.
But
how are you going to build? How are you going to build an island, an artificial island, a piece of land up there? That water's deep up there, isn't it?
Yeah, but remember, they've done it for all the oil rigs.
So it's going to be a floating kind of thing, though. So is that what you're saying?
No, it's actually, they're talking about a steel structure that they would sink to the to the floor of the ocean and then build off, you know, the stuff extending up above the waves that put the wind generators on.
So could they also, do you think they're also going to associate wave-generating, electric-generating waves? You know, there's that. We've talked about that before where it looks to me like they could have a twofer up there. They get the wind and the waves.
I think they have to stick with one.
Okay.
Because you know, one is tricky enough as it is, and that way you have all your focus and your repair and your maintenance are all on one element, you know, done multiple times. But they are talking about using the electricity to produce hydrogen at a point and then piping hydrogen back to the country. So what it does, it creates an energy source unlike anything we have right now in the world that
sets
a standard for how to do that.
Mm-hmm. And constant. I mean, I've been to the Coachella Valley where there are thousands of different sizes of windmills in Southern California. And in any given day up there, I've been through there a couple of times over the years. And any given day you drive through there and maybe only 10% of them are turning.
That's because their write-off was gone, and they just don't give a darn.
Yeah, and there's no money to take them down. When they put them up, there's no money to take them down. All right, let's move over and talk about this 3D printing. Actually, going to 3D print new platforms in space?
Here's the thing. It costs a lot of money to ship a completed structure into outer space.
Right.
If you could build it in outer space, you would cut the cost dramatically. And this experiment, which is going to be done sometime in 2022, is going to test to see if 3D printing works in a zero-gravity environment.
Interesting.
The likelihood is that it will work very well.
But they still have to ship the throughput up there, the materials that go into...
Think about this. You've got a structure that's mostly air because it's rooms for the astronauts to move around in. And you have shipping that air and that dead space up with the cabinets and the equipment and stuff like that. If you could print a lot of that stuff, so you're taking it out of a powder, you can take the powder up in a much smaller container and still end up with the same result. So it allows you to, in fact, do more at lower launch costs.
Right.
The weight is the same, but the volume is very different.
I got a prediction. This is going to sound a little bit... but I've got a prediction. I predict that after they try that, they're going to realize it's better to 3D print the components on the ground, you know, on Earth, and ship the components up there to be assembled up there. That's what I think of what they'll wind up doing.
Okay, I'll give you just one aside to that.
Okay.
One of the universities in California has already printed a 3D rocket engine that works just fine. So if you can print a 3D rocket engine, why wouldn't you print it out of space?
A wall component. That's exactly right. Hold on to that thought. Right back with Joel Barker. When we come back, we're going to talk about knocking a drone down with a handheld weapon that doesn't have bullets.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.